probably get holy hell for this later. I should, because I woke up. I don't like to wake people up, but Carol Lieberman, very important. I got the call or the nod last. I was out like a light, though. I was dead to the world at 9:30, believe it or not. An early Sunday turn-in for me. But I would have taken Carol Lieberman in a heartbeat. Carol Lieberman, of course, we know her as being one of the best at what she does as far as a forensic psychologist, all the great work she does out on the West Coast, and a lot happening as far as the Petito case and everything else. I wanted to get her in, but she has every right to yell at me. Forensic psychiatrist, we should say, expert witness, Dr. Carol Lieberman, nice enough to give us a couple of minutes here on the East Coast, where it's about, 20 to 5 in the morning, I would say. But thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
You know, doctor, you called it, okay? And that's the reason why I was really, I really wanted to get you on. Because, you know, we saw this interview that Gabby's best friend had. I think her name was Rose, right? Rose Davis is her name?
Yeah.
And Rose Davis pointed a couple of things out. You accentuated this as far as the behavior of the boyfriend, ex-fiance, whatever he is, this Brian Laundrie. Can you elaborate a little bit here?
Sure. Well, you know, from what we had known before, for example, the interview with the police in Utah, and just whatever, there really wasn't that much out there yet, but whatever there was, I recognized that he fit the profile of one of the 12 types of bad boys that I wrote about in my book called Bad Boys, Why We Love Them, How to Live with Them, and When to Leave Them. And the profile is the Prince of Darkness, which is the same profile as OJ. These are basically wife abusers or girlfriend abusers. And these are guys, and then Rose, and then her friend, Rose, you know, then came out with some stories which supported that. And we knew already, though, another thing that was a clue was that the way he was so sadistically refusing to tell anything to anybody, you know, that his not talking revealed more than if he had said something. Let me go into some of the symptoms.
Yeah,
you know,
please.
Some of the things that she talked about. For example, he talked about his not wanting Gabby to go out with her. She gave an example of a story where they were supposed to go out dancing, and he hid Gabby's ID so that she couldn't go into a bar and go with her friends. And she talked about another part of this. Besides Prince of Darkness, there's a darker side that we don't really know for sure about, other than Rose said that there were 7 to 10 times that Gabby came and stayed at her house because Brian was having one of his episodes. And she described his episodes as his hearing voices and other strange behavior, which would be reflective of psychosis, you know, schizophrenia or manic depressive illness, or drugs.
Yep. All telltale signs, without question, Carol.
Not somebody you want to go off into the woods with.
No, you're right. But these were all signs. You know, I was just wondering about the parents, the Petito parents. Did they not know of certain situations happening here? Now, there was some distress, obviously, along this trip. You go back to the 12th of August in Moab, Utah, as far as a witness alerting officials, thus the stopping of the van. You saw a very emotional Gabby Petito tell the officers exactly what was going on, a little bit of a disagreement there with a boyfriend. You know, you could see some scratches as far as Laundrie's face was concerned, right around the eyes. Just curious, I mean, did anybody know parent-wise what was going on here at all?
Well, you know, you do have to wonder about that. I mean, of course, it's terrible to say, you know, her parents just lost her, presumably that this body is her. But, I mean, yes, you know, this story should be a cautionary tale for all girls and their parents, young women and their parents, as far as, you know, how you really need to know more about the, your daughter's boyfriend, and to not just go along with it. You know, girls who, women for that matter too, who are most vulnerable to fall for guys like this are women who had a bad relationship in one way or another with her, with their father. And now she, her parents were divorced, and although both of the fathers seemed to, you know, be very involved and love her and all this kind, still, she talked about having OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and a divorce would have been particularly upsetting to her, upsetting her world. So that would have made her more vulnerable to him. But yes, it really is a cautionary tale. And that time that they were stopped, you know, it's so sad to look back and think, if those police, I mean, you can't blame them now in hindsight, but if those police in Utah had done, had put one of them in jail, you know, had done more to split them up than just put them in a hotel room overnight, this could have been avoided, possibly, although if they would have continued to go on, you know, it, it would have happened or could have happened later. One of the interesting things is this type of young man, you know, and she said this to the Utah police. She said, he doesn't like me writing my blog. You know, we fight over that. Now, that is, and she said we were fighting over that all morning when they were stopped. That is similar to the friend saying he didn't want her to go out with him to the bar. These guys want to isolate their woman so that they can't, but they're afraid of abandonment. They're afraid that the woman is going to find somebody else or and abandon them. And that's what brings out their violence. And so this blog represented a threat because that was her contact with the outside world. People would be responding and that kind of thing. So, you know, she talked about how he pushed her. She told the police in Utah that he pushed her on her chin and pushed her back. You know, it could have been something like that, that he got angry about the blog or something, you know, felt threatened that she was going to leave him, and he just pushed her, not meaning necessarily to kill her, but if she was standing on one of those rocks, you know, that's all it would have taken.
Now, a couple of things which really underlines what you are saying here. I read where her friends, Gabby's friends, a lot of them never met this guy.
Yes.
Which was a little unusual to me. She was dating him for a couple of years. You're not talking about, you know, a 3 or 4 month relationship. This is a couple of years now, Doc.
Yes.
And accepted his proposal. Now, that's number one. And let me tell you the other thing that bothered me. It seems to me the parents, and I even said to the Sarge, we had Joe Jackal on earlier, you know, there's got to be some accountability here. I'm just wondering on the side of intimidation based on the streak here that you're outlining of Brian Laundrie, his makeup, that type of thing. Parents have had to, obviously, they have had to undergo something here over the years, realizing a possible mental impairment of some kind, maybe thinking the capability of violence involved here. You know, maybe there was a little, not maybe, I'm sure there was intimidation as far as this 23-year-old to his parents, thus the silence that we have seen over the last couple of weeks. Is that in tune as far as this guy?
Yes, I think that that is probably the explanation for why they let him come home and went along with not contacting the police and not making him talk and letting him get a lawyer and all of that. Yes, they probably were intimidated by either his, you know, psychiatric problems and or his propensity for violence. You know, one would, but it's even with that though, so hard to kind of just not be upset with them, you know, to not think that they should have done more. They shouldn't have harbored him. I mean, I think they should, if it turns out that he did kill her and they can prove that and all of that. I mean, I think the Florida police really did, fall down on this job. And the least they should have brought him, they should have questioned him, they should have questioned the parents. The parents should have done more, even if they were scared. And the police should have at least kept him under surveillance. The idea that he could, you know, just walked away and we think he's in this big park, but, you know, he could be anywhere. He could be halfway around the world at this point.
And maybe there's a little something with this, you know, getting out to these parks, complete isolation. You know, maybe maybe this guy had this process of thinking, you know what, good place to get the job done in his estimation. As far as, listen, I'm just speculating here.
Right.
We got to find out more. But, you know, this is what happens in the mind of depravity here as far as this Brian Laundry is concerned.
Well, if he's having voices, for example, telling him, command hallucinations, they're called, telling him to push her off her ledge, for example. You know, of course, that would be a great defense, you know, an insanity defense. It was the voices who told me to do it. But, I mean, you know, there are a number of things that could have taken place. Yes, there was this hypothesis that he brought her to a certain place where there's a zone where no state is, you know, where people get away with murder because there is no state that has jurisdiction over it. So I don't know. Maybe he knew about that, but I mean, it's probably just that he, you know, he felt threatened one day. He felt threatened in terms of her abandoning him, and she seemed like such a sweet, vulnerable, frail girl. It's just so sad.
Final one here regarding Laundry himself. I mean, what do you think? Do the authorities get him alive? Now, you've seen a lot of these types of cases, Dr. Lieberman, where, you know, obviously one takes their own life and everything else, nothing to live for, completed his task here. I mean, in essence, where do we find Brian Laundry if we do find him at all?
Well, you know, if he were to find out, like, I mean, I guess he has his phone with him, although why then haven't they pinged it? Maybe they tried, I don't know. But if he found out already, or that they found her and that she's dead, you know, that he could feel like there's no point in his living. One, because he lost her, even if he caused it, and two, because, you know, he doesn't want to go to jail. So he could commit suicide. It's possible, you know, it's possible that they'll find him dead as well. You know, when you compare all these dark scenarios to their Instagram photos, their videos and so on, where they're looking so happy and they're kissing and doing somersaults on the beach. I mean, it's so contradictory to that, but these are the kinds of things that can happen.
Really can. I tell you, it's beyond troubling. And of course, you know, we feel for the Petitos and the Schmidt family this morning. It has just been one of those storylines. Dr. Carol Lieberman, America's psychiatrist, giving us a couple of minutes here. The author, of course, folks, I recommend the book, Bad Boys, Why We Love Them, How to Live with Them, and When to Leave Them. Very important book in this type of storyline. Very interesting book. Can't thank you enough. I know I disturbed you.
It was only 4:20 in the morning. It's okay.
Whatever. Listen, we'll make it up to you, but we can't thank you enough. Vital information coming from one of the top experts in the country, folks. We wanted to give that to you. Doc, thanks so much. I appreciate it all.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.